Yeah, you know what you can get me, Pee-wee?
What?
El Hombre.
First of all, as a service to the listeners, this is an absolute forget about it.
El Hombre.
El Hombre is brought to you by LoanEstimateReview.com.
El Hombre.
He's a pariah. I mean, it's like going after raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens.
El Hombre.
The 5 o'clock refresh is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, made to chill. You look forward to it every Tuesday at 5 o'clock here with Bob, Dave, and more. We bring in the one, the only, El Hombre, Michael Bradley, for a conversation. Hello, Michael.
What's happening, everybody?
Sports and whatnot. We're talking about the potential of what's out there and what we did see this weekend. Did you watch the match, by the way?
I watched parts of it in between going to the driving range, so I was inspired by Tom Brady's wretched front nine to go out and try to hit some golf balls. But I know
that's what we were talking about in the previous segment. That I'm a casual fan at best. I mean, I don't really pay attention to golf, but I tuned into this. I loved every moment of it. I thought it went off without a hitch. I thought the personalities were great. Peyton Manning's hilarious. Hearing Phil explain how to read the greens by the color of the grass and which way it's lying. Everything about it I thought was really well done and showcased the personalities, and Barkley on the broadcast. I thought it was spectacular.
It was a lot better than when last year Tiger and Phil played that match over Thanksgiving weekend. I agree. Everything about it was good. I would have liked a little more trash talk, but I think they did a very good job. It was produced well. Barkley adds, I'd said Barkley and let him, describe a guy making, spaghetti, and it would still be funny. So it was very well done. There was competition, right? It went down to the last couple holes, so you weren't sure what was going to happen. And it was something to watch that you didn't know what was going to happen in it. I mean, granted, when they play the 2017 RBC Open final round, I don't remember who's going to win, but there, that's still anticlimactic. This was an actual decision. There was a winner. There was a loser. And I think it was well done. It was a nice little appetite, wetter for what's to come.
Jim, go ahead.
Did we lose Dave there?
Yes, okay. We did.
Yeah, cool. I appreciate what you had to say about Tom Brady, because I was thinking the same thing there, El Hombre. I was watching him going, oh, my goodness, he's trying to find that swing, and he just completely lost. And it really made him more relatable. And I went back and forth with a guy on Twitter that used to play for the Seahawks, Paul Moyer. And it's just a different deal for him. He didn't think that Brady was nervous. He thought he was maybe excited, but I think he was clearly nervous because he was hitting shots that he wasn't accustomed to hitting.
Well, I mean, look, we don't know how good a golfer he is, and this is a very difficult course. You're playing with two of the best golfers in the world. There's some money. People are watching. And this is not his, this is not his arena. Put him on a football field, he's perfectly comfortable. Put him on a golf course where the stakes are kind of high, and I'm not talking about the money. He doesn't care about the money, but winning and losing, he plays a couple times a month maybe when he's out of season. He's not somebody that's playing. And, you get from, July through February, he's not getting on the links too often. So this was something he's not – there's a chance that maybe he's just not a very good golfer, because some of his shots were just, I'm sitting there going, all right, I could do that. I mean, do that badly. So he was clearly the fourth best golfer of the group, and Manning looked like he was more comfortable.
Hey, on both of those guys, Michael, I'm just curious what you've thought of them. I mean, Tom Brady's much hated here in Seattle because of Super Bowl 49, and everybody thinks, oh, he's perfect, and he's got this money, and he's a good-looking guy, and he's married to a supermodel and all this, but I've always liked that guy. And Peyton Manning, just the timing of the comedy and everything, he's very natural. Did you think anything differently of those guys? Were you like a Tom Brady hater?
Well, he's a Michigan man. How am I going to hate the guy? I mean, I'm not a giant fan of him. I'd like to have his jawline, okay? Yeah, that doesn't stink. He plays for other teams. I have people I respect. I mean, look, when I was young, younger and in my teens, anybody on the other team I hated, right? I'd go and boo anybody. I went and saw Willie Mays play when he was with the Mets, and he hit a home run. Everybody is, you know, my dad's cheering because it's Willie Mays at the twilight of his career. I'm booing because he hit a home run against the Phillies. Same thing with Hank Aaron. I saw him hit a home run live. My father's cheering. And what are you cheering for? He hit one against the Phillies. He's saying that's Hank Aaron. But now you have to respect people. If they do it right, if they win. Now, he cheated, and you know, that took away a little bit of the luster of it. But, you know, I don't harbor any that much against him because he doesn't play against the Eagles that often. And when the Eagles face him in the Super Bowl, they beat him, and he dropped a pass on a quarterback, you know, trick play. So these guys are very careful about how they present themselves in public, all four of those guys. We really don't know what they're like. Peyton Manning has probably done it better than anybody in the history of athletics. Everybody who sees Peyton Manning in a public setting thinks that Peyton Manning could be their best friend. So he does a great job with that, and I think that, you know, we saw these guys on their best behavior playing a little bit of golf, and it was fun.
What about it, though, Michael? Did you see something on Sunday that once the PGA Tour and other tours get going, that maybe they can incorporate it to get more casual fans interested in the game?
I mean, maybe if – look, here's what's going to get more casual fans interested in the game. Old Eldrick looked like he was in pretty good shape. All right, he looked healthy, and he was hitting the golf ball well. What, he hit every green, every fairway? If he's going to come back and play like that, then the casual fans are going to get re-engaged. When they're competing, these guys don't want microphones, you know, attached to the back of their pants. They don't want to be listening to Charles Barkley heckling them there when they're standing over an 8-foot putt for birdie. They want to compete and play. The casual fan for golf is only going to come back if Tiger Woods is at the top of his game.
Michael, we saw a proposal from Major League Baseball that the Players Association will have to figure out if they approve of, which I'm going to guess they won't, because it's calling for pay cuts from the sliding scale from the, you know, the top earners, the highest paid in the league, and then they'll take the biggest cuts versus those making less. Do you have any optimism that that'll be accepted? And do you think we're going to see baseball if they, because it just feels like, yeah, they can find a way to agree on just about everything else. But when you get to that dirty topic of finances, I know you're on the side of the players and, you know, others are on the side of the owners, what have you. But it's not going to matter to the public, I don't think. I think they're both going to look bad. I think the players are going to look greedy or whatever if they say, well, I was going to make seven. Now I'm only making three this year. How am I supposed to deal with that? They're just not going to engender a lot of sympathy from the fans out there.
Yeah, and here's what I'm going to say to the fans. I'll say it one more time. Go ahead and back the oligarchs. I love it. They laugh at you. Baseball is out there saying, the fans need baseball. No, the owners want money. So be smart. And when you say, well, he only gets $3 million, it's all relative. There are 750 Major League Baseball players. That's it. Out of 350 million American people, oh, by the way, the Dominican Republic, Venezuela, you know, so there's 750 people in the world who can do this job. When Sylvester Stallone gets $20 million to make Rambo, nobody gets mad when it stinks. Nobody's out there going, this selfish SOB, he's the worst person in the world. But when a baseball player wants to get paid what he's worth, on the marketplace, and this is, it's all relative. You're a salesman, you do a great job selling. Sorry, we're not going to give you a big bonus, even though you set the sales record, because you look greedy. You would go bananas. So let's support the real rich guys. They really care about the fans. They really do. Think about that the next time you pay $14 for a beer. So they're not going to accept this, but this is a step away from the salary cap, so at least it's another chance to bargain. I think we'll see baseball, and by the end of the week, there will be a deal, because there has to be. If they go into June and there's no baseball, there's no agreement, there's not going to be any baseball July 4th. They need 3 or 4 weeks of summer training, or whatever the heck they're going to call it.
Let me ask you this, and this may be distasteful comparison, but the Siegfried and Roy thing, when the tiger attacks one of them and everybody says the tiger went crazy, and then somebody came back and said, no, the tiger went tiger. I mean, aren't these just owners going owner? I mean, do we expect some goodwill from owners because it's a sports, you know, like all of a sudden it's some community goodwill or something? Are they different than any other owner of any business?
No, they're not. But here's the thing. Don't side with the rich people because they don't care about anybody else but themselves and their money. These five, you're right. It's the old thing that the alligator gives the frog a ride across the river, and at the end, the alligator eats the frog, and the frog's upset. You know, as he's going down, what are you doing? He goes, I'm an alligator. So these are alligators. So the funny thing is, the fans think that if the players are trying to get paid what they're worth in an open market at a place that makes $9 billion in revenue a year, they are somehow greedy. Whereas the owners, who will squeeze every penny out of the fan that they possibly can, oh, go 60 and 102? We're raising ticket prices. Have playoff games? You ever buy a playoff baseball ticket? It's they give you three options. A, layaway. B, pay up front. Or C, plasma. So either way, the owners are going to get theirs.
Yeah, but there's also that just don't buy a ticket and don't go.
I agree. They watch TV. And by the way, the owners are well compensated for the opportunity for us to sit and watch baseball on television and watch advertisement after advertisement. Look, both sides are going to either decide we want to get money this year or we don't. And all we should be caring about is the final product. This is the thing. Don't ask how sausage is made. Okay? Just enjoy the tasty link.
All right, I'm going to hang a curveball for you. What the hell? Get the bat off your shoulder here, El Hombre. You're doing really well. I mean, you're fouling some off. But how can you make a sweeping generalization about the owners like that? Because they're losing $640,000 a game if they don't have fans coming. I still am standing on the side of the players and that they need to understand that the revenue isn't going to be the same because they don't have the fans coming to the damn games buying those $14 beers.
Do you see what I'm doing here? This is the world's smallest violin playing My Heart Bleeds for You, owners, okay? They're losing the money. Are there franchise values going up? Yes, they are. Are they going to be really sitting there and reaching into their pockets, pulling out their Chicago rolls of money with the Grover Cleveland on the outside and a bunch of ones on the inside and saying, how much do I have to pay today, $640,000? Good Lord, I won't be drinking Dom Perignon this weekend. It's a zero. Look, the players are going to take less money. The players are going to get a prorated salary. And under this agreement, my goodness, they're getting even worse than the prorated salary because they're going to play 82 or maybe even 100 games, depending how far late they want to go into the season. All I'm saying is don't paint the players as the bad guys. There is a big pile of money every single year but this year that has been out there. The players get what the owners pay them. It's called a contract. The owners get ridiculous amounts of money from television networks, and we get to watch baseball. So they're all trying to make as much money as they can. And, oh, by the way, America, everybody here is a capitalist when it comes to themselves, but when it comes to the players, they're socialists. You should be giving it up for the good of the game. You want to watch baseball, I get it, but it's not the player's fault. It's not the owner's fault. It's two sides that won't come to an agreement in collective bargaining, which usually goes on behind closed doors.
Michael, let me ask you about something going on in football, or things happening in football, I should say. One of them is a conversation out here, which I don't think anybody takes that seriously. I don't think it's likely to happen, but there are rumors out there that Russell Wilson would love to bring Antonio Brown to Seattle. We don't even know if this guy's going to be able to play. He's got investigations into these allegations made against him. We've certainly seen as much as we need to on film, him screaming at the, you know, the mother of his child out in front of his house and different things that he's done off the field. But hypothetically, if Russell wanted, let's say that Carson Wentz wanted him, would you want Antonio Brown on your team?
Not right now, no. I mean, and for all the reasons you say, we need evidence, and when I say we, I'm meaning an owner, a team. You ask me what I want him on my team. If I'm going to say I'm a player. There's evidence that has to be presented that this guy's going to behave himself, that he's not going to come in, you know, complain about his helmet, worry about his shoes, do something untoward toward a woman, be nasty to the general manager, pout. I said it on this program before. I think the man has some serious issues that he needs to address. And I don't say it in a frivolous way. I believe that he has some things he has to handle. Has he handled them? And then you said there's legal stuff. How's that all going to be sorted out? So you know, it's nice. Tiki Barber is saying he's going to Baltimore. Somebody's saying he's coming to Seattle. In order for him to get on the field, he has to be able to show that he can behave himself, and then he has to be able to show that he's going to be able to get clear of all the problems that he's had put together over the last year or so.
Hey, Michael, did you watch the Lance Armstrong thing? And I'm just curious, the question, I guess, is there a I probably know the answer here. There's a trade-off for being great, and a lot of it is you're going to piss off a lot of other people. But you have any fascination with this whole Lance Armstrong thing?
No, I didn't watch any of it. I mean, to me, this guy is one of the biggest – I mean, I'm no fan of Balco Bonds. I mean, he's – to me, number one public enemy in baseball history. This guy is I would put him worse than Bonds, because he played the whole testicular cancer card, making himself seem like a hero to so many. Live strong, all that. And all the while, he was jabbing more needles into himself than a crazed acupuncturist could do in an afternoon. So he was cheating every way he could. Now, cycling is a filthy sport when it comes to performance-enhancing drugs and things. But absolutely, to me, I didn't want to watch it because I didn't want to see any point. And I don't know what happened that he didn't come out and say, I cheated all the time. I didn't want to hear him rationalize it. I didn't want to hear him. Everybody else was doing it. I wanted to hear him. The only thing I ever want to hear out of him is, I juiced like crazy, and I was disingenuous to these people who thought I was a hero because of my comeback story from cancer.
El Hombre, what about 4th and 15 replacing the onside kick? We might find that out on Thursday when the NFL owners vote on that proposal. What do you think?
I love the onside kick. I really do. I know that it's dangerous as heck because there's some guy, poor guy, looking at this ball bouncing 30 feet in the air, and here comes a human missile down to just completely disembowel him. But the excitement of when it gets recovered, the anticipation as that ball is taking that second bounce on the turf when it's kicked correctly, and just the idea that a kickoff has to go exactly 10 yards before it can be recovered by the other team. That's something about football, and particularly the NFL, that is decidedly uncorporate. It sounds like a rule you made up in your backyard, right? You're down at the end. What are we going to do? How do we get the ball back? Okay, I get it. If you kick the ball 10 yards, you can recover it. Ooh, that sounds good. What's 10 yards? Well, that brick right there in the back of the house. Okay, let's do it. The rest of the NFL is so... got to wear the same uniforms. Your socks have to be up here. You can't wear those shoes. You got to wear these shoes. Can't have an alternate jersey because you're only allowed to have one helmet. There's so many ridiculous arcane rules. This one has a little bit of whimsy to it. I would hate to see it go away.
What do you think of the sky judge, which I think, you know, if you took anything from the XFL that was close to unanimous, it would be that everybody loved the sky judge. And, you know, that's part of what will be voted on in this thing with the NFL. And we just talked to John Clayton, who doesn't think it's going to pass. I don't feel like there's a logical reason to argue against it. But what would you argue against? What would be the downside to the sky judge, in your opinion?
I think that you know, how many things would be overruled? I mean, I think the NFL's afraid of saying, oh, my goodness, if we put a guy, we put the eye in the sky, all of a sudden our officials are going to look like they're either A, incompetent, B, on the take, or C, both. My thing is, put somebody in, like, some sort of hovercraft. You actually have a sky judge, and he's dressed in robes with a gavel, and he's above the state of the field, and he gets to look down. Really, I want that. Nothing electronic. I want a person up there. Like the Jetsons or something.
So a robe is what you think is that's going to invoke some authority. Yeah, there you go. I like it. Hey, do you have any?
British with a wig, huh?
Yeah, the wigs, the powdered wigs. There you go. I have a co-host who gets all fired up about the rule. If the offense has the ball and they fumble out of the back of the end zone or the side of the end zone, the other team gets the ball on the 20-yard line. to me, the end zone is a special place. It's a magical place. So you take care of that. And if you're an idiot and you fumble through the side or the back, then you deserve to lose the ball. Does that one get you fired up at all?
Yeah, you're right. If you fumble the ball out there, it's over. Sorry, you've lost it. You don't get the ball back. So I'm with you on that one. The problem is in the NFL, and I know that there are people that sit in rooms for days and come up with every possible scenario, and yet stuff still happens that people say, "Wow, we didn't expect that one." So I look at that as I'm with you on that one. You fumbled out of the end zone. Sorry. Give it to the other team.
Well, I'm not with you on that one at all. I don't get it. If you're in the field of play and you fumble the ball, you give the ball back to the team that had last possession, and that's the offense.
If it goes out of the end zone, you blew it. You know, here's the thing. These rule changes are just –
perfect.
We care too much about the rules. And granted, they do determine games, and they usually the craziness usually happens with 12 seconds left in a 24-23 game. But it's just, you know, the NFL is spent, and this is why I want the onside kick. The NFL is spending so much time creating these scenarios. We have to have something that gives us a little bit of fun, and that's the onside kick. And you know, and with you know apps on the phone, you'll be able to gamble on it. So I mean, that's even better.
Hey, Michael, I finally found something that you and I agree on. You want to know what that is?
Cold beer.
Cold beer. We agree on that. But you don't like the term goat.
Oh, hate it! Hate it! Stop.
I do too. Please. Goat. Goat means you're the goat of the game. You're the loser.
Yes.
You're the reason we
greatest
lost the game.
Of
and all
time.
Of a sudden, they come up with this. I know they come out with this greatest of all time acronym. That's a bunch of BS. I don't like it at all either.
He's the goat. She's the goat. Please. Okay? Stop it. I don't even care about the fact of what it really means. The goat is the person who blows the game. If you watch the movie The Natural, as Roy Hobbs gets up for his last time and he's bleeding through his uniform, and he's fouling the ball off and hitting the window with Mitch, whatever his name is in there, he's drawing a picture of Roy Hobbs swinging and missing with a goat sitting up there eating a tin can going, "Hey, you want my tin can?" So that's the true meaning of the word goat in sports. Now all of a sudden it's greatest of all time. There are four major sports. There can only be four greatest of all times. There cannot be 300 goats, okay? So stop with the acronym. Stop with the term. Just say so-and-so is the greatest, the best player, and we don't know. Somebody, you know, an 18-year-old asked me the other day who's the best baseball player of all time. Who do you think I said?
Ted Williams.
Ted Williams, the greatest hitter of all time. Babe Ruth, the guy won 90 games as a pitcher. He hit 714 home runs, had a batting average of over .340, has the highest career OPS of all time, I believe. Didn't strike out that much, never struck out 100 times in a season. Held the record for most consecutive scoreless innings in a World Series at 29 until Whitey Ford broke it. So nobody ever did that. Now someone else is going to go to guns against me and say Barry Bonds was the greatest or Willie Mays was the greatest. Hank Aaron. We have no idea. What would Babe Ruth have been like playing in the 70s when he showed up to spring training fat and out of shape and had to work himself into shape? In football, what would Joe Montana have been like now? What would Wayne Gretzky have been like now with the neutral zone trap and more attention to defense instead of games, the time when games like 9-7 were okay? So, first of all, you're never going to be able to find out who's the greatest. It's almost a silly debate because there's no definitive answer. And then you have this term, GOAT, which is bothersome on many levels. Eradicate it. Change it.
All right, there you go. And by the way, Babe never played against African-American players, so that's a tough one.
Nobody plays against African-American players now. They play against Latino players.
Well, still,
it was
different level of competition back then.
Other than Ferguson Jenkins, I mean, the pitchers, there have not been a lot of African-American pitchers. So unless you're saying
right.
that the African-American outfielder is going to jump up and grab his home runs before they were hit out of Yankee Stadium, I'm just saying who's – now, Satchel
Paige. Maybe they would have lit him up as a pitcher.
Maybe, but back then he was throwing a ball of socks. Nobody's lighting anybody up as a pitcher.
All right.
He had 714 home runs with a baseball that was basically made of lint.
He is El Hombre, Michael Bradley. You can follow him on Twitter, at Daily Hombre is where you'll find him on Twitter, and you can find him here every Tuesday at 5 o'clock. Michael, great stuff. We will talk to you next week.
So long, suckers.
El Hombre is brought to you by LoanEstimateReview.com.
There you go. In all of his glory, every single Tuesday here with Bob, Dave, and more. Hey, high school athletes in our region and across the nation have had their sports seasons or even careers cut short by the COVID-19 pandemic, and 710 ESPN Seattle wants to recognize them. So if you know of a local team or athlete impacted by this crisis, then use the hashtag 710 Hometown Heroes. Hashtag 710 Hometown Heroes. Use it on Twitter or Facebook to share their story and why they're your hometown hero. Coming up, is the Seahawks offensive line better or worse than it was last year? We'll talk about that next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
A reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's brought to you by Dubin Law Group. You can download it for free. Listen to the show live. Take us with you. You're out there in the sunshine. You can listen to the show. You can listen to the podcast from the app. You can text all the mean things that people text into us at 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. I always do enjoy when somebody will text in and something insulting, and Jim will try to be nice back, and they don't respond. There's something about that that makes me chuckle. you try to kill them with kindness, Jim, and 9.5 times out of 10, they respond with something nice, but that one that just doesn't, they just stick to their nastiness. There's something funny about that to me. I don't know why.
Yeah, well, no, that's okay. There was a guy last week who I wrote back to him. He was giving me a hard time about something, and I just wrote back. I said, well, have a good evening. Thanks for listening. Really appreciate it, and hope you and your family are doing all right. And he wrote back, and he goes, yeah, I hope you and your family are doing all right, too, but you still have a trash take on that. So, I mean, he held to his guns anyway. Trash take.
Oh,
I got
boy.
A lot of trash takes.
You got to love people. People just going out of their way to be kind, you know. It's not we just disagree with you. We got to make it personal. I not only do I have a difference of opinion, but you're different in a bad way, and you're dumb, and you don't know sports, and what are you doing on the air? I get a kick out of that. Anyway, you guys are free to do that. 710-710 is the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. The question is about the offensive line, and we've touched on this here and there with different guests. Are they better or worse? Now, Bob Condotta wrote an article for the Seattle Times just asking about the team individually as a whole, and then went through individual position groups. Did they really improve in this offseason? You guys can check that out. But a couple different cuts. We had Joe Thomas on, the Hall of Famer. He is talking about the possibility of having four new starters on the O-line, and how concerning would that be?
Well, it would definitely be concerning to me if I was a Seahawks fan, especially considering the shortened offseason. I think you hit the nail on when you're talking offensive line play. It's all about experience. It's all about playing together, being in the system for a long time. And having those changes takes time to get things figured out. It takes time to get on the same page because there's a lot of nonverbal communication that happens on the line of scrimmage, at the line of scrimmage before the snap. And a lot of times, especially when you're in a loud environment, you can just be able to look to the guy to your left or look to the guy to your right. And just that glance, and you can change the lineman. And if there's a lot of mistakes up front, screws up everything in the passing game, screws up everything in the running game.
So problematic there, according to Joe Thomas. Now, noise may not be a concern this season. It could be empty stadiums. We'll see. But quickly, before we weigh in, cut number 15 from our buddy Ray Roberts. Feeling like, you know, if this happened under Tom Cable, potentially four new starters, it'd be more of a concern than it is under Coach Solari.
If they were doing this line makeover and they had Tom Cable, then I'd probably have a different opinion about it. But I really like Solari. I like the way he coaches. I like his relationship with the guys. I like that his personality and persona isn't bigger than the offensive line or the team. He doesn't think he's the offensive line guru or the second head coach, any of those kind of things. Just kind of dig in with his guys and get the work done. And so I think, you know, once Russell kind of gets in and kind of and they get this offensive line sorted out, I think he may feel better about what they did than what he does right now with it on paper.
So different level of comfort there for Ray. But, Dave, this goes against everything we ever hear about offensive lines, that, man, it's all about that continuity, that cohesiveness. These guys are, you know, they need to be together as much as possible and the same five together. They work in concert together. This flies in the face of it potentially with, again, potentially four new guys on that line outside of Brown.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot like the defense to see, you know, whether or not they are better or worse than last year because, yeah, there's a lot of new faces. I agree with Ray, though, and I think Ray is also a Howard Mudd guy. And we had Howard Mudd on, who's an old offensive line coach that's been around for forever. He's in retiring now and kind of does some analysis and stuff. But I had a pretty long conversation with him before he came on the air with us, and he just kind of wanted to know what we were talking about and everything. But he really had good things to say about Mike Solari. And not only that, just listening to the players and what they said about him and the way that he coaches, I think that's he's the ace in the hole, really. And just trying to get those guys together and – I agree with Ray. I mean, he is a very humble guy, and he just, it's all about his players. I love everything about Mike Solari. So that's the, I think, like I said, the ace in the hole for them because, yeah, you've got a bunch of guys coming together, and we had a pretty good established going into last year. Bob, I think even you were probably at an all-time low as far as complaining about offensive line, and rightfully so. I thought they had good depth, but then, you know, they had a couple of injuries and everything. But last year was pretty good going in, and, yeah, it's now all of a sudden, I wouldn't say it's shaky, but it's very unsure. It might be the most unsure, you know, sort of squad on this entire team as far as a group goes.
Well, yeah, I was just looking at Bob Condotta's story in the Seattle Times, and he went position by position on whether it's better or worse or the same as last year. And offensive line, he's got it being worse. And I was kind of going, well, okay, let's see. How does he have it worse here? Okay, he's got Lewis, Damian Lewis, starting at right guard. I think we all have him penciled in, the third-round draft choice, taking over for Fluker. Is that an upgrade? Well, maybe down the road, but this year, a rookie starting at right guard, you wonder a little bit about that. B.J. Finney taking over for Britt at center. And as much as you like, we talked to the guy from Pittsburgh who covered the team, covered the Steelers. He thinks Finney's a better guard than he is a center, but you've got Finney penciled in at center. So is he better than Britt? We'll see. The contract suggests that, you know, I tend to look at contract figures based, you know, on expectations for these guys. He's got a two-year, $8 million deal. So they're expecting a high level of play from him, starter-level type play. And then Brandon Schell at right tackle, 2 years, $11 million. Is he going to be better than Ifedi? You hope so. So there's definitely some question marks. It's kind of like the Mariners, you know, when they bring pitchers in that you hope some are going to pop and you know that some won't. And with the Seahawks this year, I like that they brought Upati back, though. You got a bird in the hand there with Upati, the veteran at left guard. If Phil Haynes doesn't come on right away, you still got the old veteran Upati who can play at left guard. And if you could keep Upati for one more year with Dwayne Brown, at least you got a consistent left side of the line.
Yeah, which obviously the blind side of your quarterback is crucial. We'll see what Upati's got left in the tank. Coming up, the executive vice president of football operations, being Troy Vincent, said that he was talking to Peter King. He said they failed. They failed with the PI review rule. We'll talk about that, see if they've learned anything moving forward. Coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Troy Vincent, who is the executive vice president of football operations for the NFL, says we blew it. We blew it. He was talking with Peter King, talking about the PI review rule that has now been abandoned. He said, quote, "We cannot fail this year. We saw a year ago with the pass interference rule when it played out, starting with myself, what we put in place last year. Those outcomes were not good for professional football because we didn't do the proper due diligence. It played out publicly. The last thing people should be talking about is the way a game is officiated. The officials should be faceless objects managing and facilitating the game flow. We failed. I'm the first in line. I shared with the league officials. I failed as the leader of that department. I failed. We cannot allow that to happen again. What did we learn from that? We've got to do our due diligence. We can't rush and just shove something in there without knowing all of the consequences. And we found that out last year, live and in action publicly. So I'm not exactly sure what he's talking about in terms of due diligence and what they didn't research. In my opinion, they failed because there were plays that they did that should have been overturned that just weren't. I mean, they called the game the same way they would otherwise, yet whoever was reviewing it neglected to take the proper steps to make the proper call. So it failed because it almost seemed like they had it in their mind, like, well, you know, if they called it on the field that way, that's what we're sticking with. And it sort of defeated the purpose of the rule being there in the first place. So I'm not entirely sure what it is he feels like they didn't research enough or where he specifically failed. But he's taking the blame for it, and he's not wrong. They did fail.
Well, I'm not saying that this is just you, Bob, but you just said they failed to make the proper call. And, you know, that's a very subjective point, right? I mean, whether or not it's pass interference, and really a lot of it is, whether it's holding or not, whether it's pass interference. And, you know, I think the thing he's talking about due diligence is maybe the fact that the NFL, that was a knee-jerk reaction because of what happened in the NFC Championship game. And I think what everybody thinks is that a lot of those calls are that. That one was very obvious, but a lot of them are not. And actually, that one was much less obvious if you watch it in full speed. It was pass interference. There's no question, but I think, you know, that's where the NFL has failed, is when they've done some knee-jerk. I still go back to the horse collar tackle. I mean, you know, that's still happening, and I don't see a lot of players. I remember a couple of players getting hurt with that, but not that many, and I've watched a lot of football, and I don't have the percentages on it, but I just felt like that was kind of a good example of something that was knee-jerk. Like the next year, all of a sudden, you couldn't tackle that way because of Terrell Owens. I felt like they reacted the same way with the whole thing in the NFC Championship game with New Orleans and was it Philly or no, New Orleans and the Rams. So yeah, it's to me, it's a very subjective call. It's a judgment call as to whether or not it's pass interference or not. So I never really saw the value in it. And again, like Michael Bradley just said, I mean, I feel like there's just too much. You don't need more. You need less. You need less officiating. They, like Troy Vincent said, they need to be these faceless. Instead, we end up here, and these guys are like rock stars, man. I mean, I see the officials walking through the tunnel. Who's it? Sterator, I saw, and I was like, wow, that guy really thinks he's something. Like, he's a celebrity, and he kind of has been made that. But I feel like those guys should be, they should be nameless and faceless and just there to help the players and not such a huge part of the game.
Yeah, they should be, and never used to be that way in football, the way it is in baseball. I mean, some of those guys really think they're part of the show behind home plate. But I appreciate Troy Vincent coming out and being honest, saying, hey, man, we blew it. You know, typically a person in his position won't go that far, but they were just trying to make sure that something that egregious or that blatant didn't that they wouldn't blow that again. And yet it was just it got to be a joke toward the end of the season, because whenever a coach challenged a PI call, it was like, why is he wasting his time doing this? Even though it looks like a good challenge, you know that they weren't going to overturn it. And it shouldn't be like that. If you're going to have that rule, then look at it objectively, and what would you call it? And then I go back to my guys at the bar in Omaha, though. Do you think those guys, Joe and Bob or whatever I named them, do you think anybody knows what pass interference truly is anymore? I don't think so. I mean, sometimes I'll look at it and go, man, that's a blatant PI, and then they don't call it. And then sometimes I'm going, well, that looked like good defense, and then they'll call it. So, yeah, it's just a hard one. I have a new one, though, I think the NFL needs to consider. That's the face mask. To give a 15-yard penalty on a face mask every single time, I think they need to go back to the 5-yard and the 15-yard that they used to have. But that's kind of off topic a little bit there.
Yeah, and let me ask you this, Dave. When you're saying they don't need to do more, what would be your argument against the Bill Belichick suggestion, which I agree with, and one of the few things he's ever said that I agree with, is that he's not campaigning for more challenges. I want 5 challenges. I want 10. No, same exact number of challenges. So you're not taking up more time. You're not, you know, you're not taxing the officials. You're not asking the officials to officiate in a different way, to look at anything in, call the game as you see. Coaches have the ability to challenge any play they want. But the onus is on them to use those as well as they can and make sure. Do you want to use that challenge here? You've only got this number of challenges. You better make sure it counts. So what's the argument against that? You're not putting anything extra on the officials. They don't have to call anything more, anything less, anything differently. All of the onus is on the coaches. Make sure you're using it in a spot where you feel like you're going to get away with it. Otherwise, you're blowing it.
Well, I don't know. I guess I just am always just in general answering this question. But, yeah, if it's the same number and it doesn't slow down the game, yeah. But, I mean, I think it's not – I don't think it's going to help the pass interference rule. I mean, it might help in maybe some other areas, but still, it's still a subjective call whether it's pass interference or not. And I feel like we don't even know what that is. And the NFL did a decent job with the catch, right? Like, I feel like we're a lot closer now to knowing what a catch is, you know, than we used to. But as far as pass interference, I don't think anybody knows. And I have to say, you know, when I'm watching it, I'm always on the defender side, even if we're even against another team, you know. So and. Yeah, and there's a lot of times where, and my big one, I guess to me, is the targeting thing with the helmet. The other thing is, what about D linemen hands to the face? You know, when they're rushing, sometimes your hand just slips up and it's not intentional. I mean, if you leave it there, fine, but if you do it at all, you get flagged for it. I think the NFL is really sensitive. I'll tell you this really quick. I've been watching these games from the 90s that my dad taped for me, and they are so boring and they're so long, and it takes, you know, it's brutal to watch. And the scoring has gotten better. I mean, I just think in general they've done a good job, but I mean, there was lots of 10-7, 14-21 type of games, and they just go on and on and on, and the officials trying to get things right and they don't move along. And so, I mean, I think that's the number one thing. But, you know, also I just think a lot of what has punished for the officials is the instant replay and the slow-mo and the high-definition television, and everybody has, you know, an opinion when it actually happens very fast out there. So as long as it doesn't take away, I guess, from the pace of the game, then okay. But I just feel like, you know, it's always we want more, not we want less. And, you know, to me, I think the game's better off with less officiating.
All right, coming up next, one of my all-time favorite segments on this show. It is What We Learned, and it's coming up next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
Fresh off of a long weekend, I think we were all ready to learn, and I have no doubt that there was a lot of learning in today's show. Is that right, DJ?
Oh, that is right. And first, kind of a weird one here. We learned that our very own Brock Heward really likes other people's calves.
Yeah, Russ does have some big hands. Remember for a while there, it was something about his calves, somebody was saying? I don't
remember the calf conversation. Probably Brock Heward. With him. You know what? Brock has a thing about calves.
He does, yeah. It's kind of
creepy. He followed me down the hallway at work one day, muttering under his breath as I was walking in front of him. It was a little disconcerting.
Yeah, anytime he's made those comments, I'm like, you know, I'm really not comfortable. Brock, do I have to go to Marin right now and file a complaint against you?
Yeah, Brock is a unique individual. I was wearing shorts one day during the summer, and I didn't even know he was behind me walking down the hall, and you just hear him going, "Yeah. Those calves, what kind of work you doing there? Looks good." Let's turn around. What are you doing, Brock? What are you doing?
Yeah, it's none of your damn business what I'm doing with my calves. And by the way, Marin is our HR lady, who is fantastic, and so I'd hate to trouble her with any complaint about Brock Heward, but
So what about it, Bob? Do you do special exercises, or are you just naturally gifted when it comes to calves?
I think it might just be genetics. I don't do much in the way of that outside of jump rope. So it's just hearing Brock do that when you're not aware somebody's behind you, you're a little startled at first. Wait, what? What are you doing, man? He just big grin on his face. You gotta love Brock. He's a goofy guy. What else have we learned, DJ?
Russell Wilson's going to be hosting the ESPYs along with Megan Rapinoe and Sue Bird. But we learned that the voice he will not be using for the ESPYs.
I can't get enough of Sue Bird and Russell Wilson, too. I mean, I think both of them are fantastic. I'm really looking forward to seeing how he does hosting it. And I know we're going to talk about this later, but, you know, watching Brady and Manning and Tiger and having Charles Barkley, you know, be the announcer, it's kind of cool to maybe we'll see a little bit new stuff from Russell. It'll be interesting to see how he, you know, what voice is he going to use? Is he going to use the Twitter voice?
It's not going to be the nighttime voice. It's going to be the press conference for us. It will not be nighttime. Yo, Seattle, we got a deal. He's a man of two voices, two deliveries. He's going to be the press conference, Russ.
Nah.
He does a good.
Nah, I think he'll be the Russ that he was at the golf event. He'll be engaging.
Yeah.
I don't think he's robotic at the press conferences, though. I don't think he'll be that way for the ESPYs.
I think he'll have personality and be fun like he was with the golf thing, too. But that voice, that affectation that he had in that video with Sierra announcing his deal, that's a different rush. You don't hear that very often.
Yeah, maybe we should have had, like, the little kid Russ that was like, hey, guys, how about this, man? I'm going to make $35 million a year. Isn't this great?
Hey, Seattle, we got a deal. I am super fired up to play for you guys, go Hawks.
What else we learned, DJ?
We learned that Jim has kind of always had problems with connection.
Ryan, how are you, man?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're good. Jim is having trouble connecting right now, so he's not there for you to you know.
The show's been improved.
The hardball questions aren't going to be there for you, so you can relax. I'm just kidding.
Well, I mean, Jim's had problems connecting for a while, but, you know, in various ways.
That's probably the first you heard that, Jim, because you weren't connected at the time.
Jim, was I a bad teammate?
Did we lose Jim again?
Jim.
Yeah. Now we can talk more trash about him.
I'm having daddy problems again.
Okay, hey, Jim, I got a proposal for you, man. Hey, I will drop GOAT, because we talked to El Diablo about it, and I will never use GOAT again if you will stop complaining about fumbles into the end zone or out of bounds or out the back of the end line. Do we have a deal?
You keep using GOAT all you want. I won't back down on that one. I'll die on that mountain or that hill or whatever that saying is. That is the dumbest rule in the NFL. You give the ball to the defense, and they did nothing to get the ball from you.
Sure they did. They swatted it out of the guy's hand, forced a fumble.
Well, I know, but Dave, if that happened on the 17-yard line and went out of bounds, if that went out of bounds on the 17-yard line, the offense would get it back at the 17-yard line.
Is the 17-yard line the same as the goal line? The goal line is a special place. It's magical. Yeah, that's where everybody wants to go. It's like heaven. Everybody sees the light and that they want to get there. And so if you're an idiot and fumble the ball into it, then you obviously don't respect it. And therefore don't deserve the ball.
How about if you gave the offense the ball back but gave it to them at the 10-yard line or the 20-yard line?
They don't get it back. They don't get the ball back at all.
Jim, I like that you value your ability to complain about it so much. So you're like, no. You say GOAT. As much as that drives me nuts when people say, you keep saying it because I want to reserve my right to complain about this rule.
There's going to be so many people that are GOATs going forward. I'm going to be calling everybody GOAT. I'm going to use it. I'm going to use it as much as I can.
I didn't think I could agree with Ombre on anything, but on that one we do.
What else did we learn, DJ?
That is all we learned today.
All right. Our thanks to our guests today, Ryan Divish, John Clayton, and El Hombre. Michael Bradley, if you missed any of that, head to the podcast page, 710sports.com. Click the podcast button and click on our picture. It's right there waiting for you each and every day. Once again, happy anniversary to Jim and his lovely bride. Great stuff today. We appreciate everybody for tuning in, and we will talk to you tomorrow right here with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Sorry, sweetheart. I didn't mean to... insult your little delicate sensibilities.
Yep. Yeah.